we present My Music. A musical panel game devised by Edward J. Mason and Tony Schreier. And here to introduce the teams is Steve Race.
Thank you and hello. At the start of another programme in the My Music series, let me remind you, before moving on to the first round, that the competitors are, as ever, Ian Wallace and Dennis Norden versus John Amis and Frank Muir. Ian Wallace, we begin with you. What is this lively piece and who wrote it?
Moment in the audience there where either the husband turned to the wife, whispered something in the ear, and then both nodded decisively and smiled. And I'm glad that for once I can nod decisively with them because I know what it is.
Yes, yes.
I wouldn't be able to specify which movement, but it is Beethoven's Violin Concerto.
Yes, gets you 2 marks. It's the start of the last movement. Notable for a famous violinist's wife, a world-famous name. She goes along to her husband's concerts, and he plays this very taxing concerto. And she once admitted that at that point, she always sings under her breath, "Thank God it's over, thank God it's over, thank God it's over at last." 2 marks to you. Dennis, a different kind of question for you. When the music stops, what precisely comes next?
I'm back again to do.
No, it's the end, actually.
Oh, do, then. Just do.
It actually ends T do, and I'll prove it. This is what comes next.
T do.
She sings up the scale solar T, T do.
Oh, she does T twice.
Yes. John Amis, we all have our likes and dislikes, and I have a curious antipathy to this piece. No doubt it's very worthy, but I just don't happen to like it. For your marks, please, what is it?
It's one of my favourite pieces.
Isn't that funny?
What does this tell us about the Turbots? Although I must say, you know, one can't tell what a marvellous piece it is from that.
No.
It's a piece by Janáček, and it's a sinfonietta.
Yes, with all those braying trumpets.
Yes, what's marvellous about... He started writing it, you know, he was asked to write some fanfares for some event which took place in a big sports arena, and so he let himself loose with an enormous brass consort with 9 trumpets. And then, as composers do, he thought, well, it's a pity to waste it. So he incorporated those 2 bits, the fanfare opening with the 9 trumpets, into an orchestral piece. Mm. And there are, I think, 2 or 3 more trumpets. Mm. So that when that piece is being played in London, most of the other orchestras in town are playing Mozart divertimentos for strings.
Because there aren't enough to go around.
I think braying trumpets are rather nice. Trumpet organs. Have you heard of trumpet organ? There's one at Ampleforth College in Yorkshire.
Is there?
And it's a marvellous noise.
I love trumpets when they declaim, the household cavalry trumpets and so on, are perfectly marvellous, I think, but braying vibrato trumpets, I can't really stand. You get them, of course, don't you, in the same sort of sound in, that was that thing by Scriabin, the Poem d'Extase. Awful, I think. Still, Frank, for you, an anatomical question. Are you prepared to answer it?
It depends what it is.
All right. Here's the music first.
Drink, 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 two eyes that are bright, but sparkle is shining on me. Drink, 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 two lips that are red and sweet as the fruit on the tree. Here's a hope that those bright eyes will shine.
Frank, while singing that, where should one's right foot be?
Oh, without question.
Yes, yes.
There was an actor in the 30s and 40s, was it Tom Holt, who always used to wear leather gloves, and he's a very tough actor, and he always stood with his foot on the chair.
That's right.
With a kind of gnarled crutch. Mm. And that's how all singers of this must stand.
While waving the stein of
beer. They've got an empty stein, right. Yes. one foot on the wooden bench.
Yes. I think on a bench or a form rather than a chair, but two marks to you.
It used to be the custom, actually, for actors to have the photographs of themselves that they used to send to managements. That pose was very popular, I remember, when just after the war, with one foot up, and the elbow on the knee, leaning negligently.
That's right.
And Harry Secombe sent one round, and he had to look at it three times before you realised there was an enormous hole in his sock.
Yes. Yes. I must say, I lost a small wager over this question, because when I asked where one's right foot should be, I was sure that Frank would say on the end of one's right leg, but you resisted that. Frank, for your second mark, was the singer John Hanson or was it not?
It was.
It was, for your second mark. Yes, that's right. John Hanson it was.
Talking of sending photographs round, the one wonderful photograph in the famous casting directory that all managements have, with photographs of all the actors, and some send more than one photograph, and this was many, many, many years ago. I can remember somebody who had in photographs of himself in about six or seven different makeups, all looking exactly the same. And he had a list of the things that he could do, which included opera, musical comedy, straight plays, pantomime, and about three or four other things, can ride a horse, speak French, and then this terribly sad thing underneath which said, always available.
Oh, tragic, really. On to the next round, which might really be called Sevens. In fact, it is called Sevens. Ian and Dennis, together. You're going to hear seven people singing ensemble. When they've finished, I want their names, please, and you get a mark for each tiny name.
I'd like to dance and tap my feet, but they won't keep in rhythm. You see, I washed them both today and I can't do nothing with them.
Oh, hum, the tune is not the worth of being a thing. Isn't this a silly song for anyone to sing?
While you're writing them down, I should tell you that Mr. Justice Cocklecarrot had even more trouble.
Yes.
He had more dwarfs to remember. Seven of the dwarfs, their names, please.
I've got four here. Yes, well, you've got more, obviously.
What have you got, then?
Call them out.
I've got Grumpy,
yes.
Yeah. Dopey, yeah. Sneezy, and Happy.
You didn't say Sneezy, did you?
Yes, I did.
Sleazy.
Sneezy.
Oh, Sneezy, that's
sneezy,
right, yes.
Sneezy. Oh, I'm sure.
All the way around, sorry.
Sleazy.
And Happy, sorry, that's right. There are three left, aren't there, Dennis?
And Happy, yes.
Yes.
Sleepy.
Yes.
Bashful.
Yes.
And Doc.
Doc! Mm. That's right. Seven out of seven. Congratulations. Very good. John and Frank, various composers have tried depicting in music the seven deadly sins. Can you please name the seven deadly sins without putting first the one that everybody else puts first?
Pride, covetousness, lust.
Oh, wait a minute.
Pride. No, it's last.
Sorry.
Pride, covetousness, lust, envy, gluttony.
Yes. Sloth, you say.
Anger. And sloth.
Sloth, yes. Vainglory or pride, desire or covetousness in Thomas Aquinas' list. You've got the seven. Yes. I thought we'd have no end of trouble over that. You got them in the right order, too, which is interesting. So far in the game, we have a tie. I remember as a small boy being absolutely convulsed with laughter when I heard a radio comedian say that a violinist's life was all pinch and scrape. It happens to be true, actually, but some violinists don't think that line's funny at all. One of the most successful of young violinists is Itzhak Perlman, to whom we dedicate this next round with gratitude for his lovely playing. Ian, just to introduce Perlman's playing, can you tell us what begins like this? And ends like this.
No.
I well, suggest, Ian, that you think of mayonnaise and then move on a bit or backwards a bit.
Mayonnaise. Mayonnaise.
I've got the answer in front of me, and that's news to me. I don't know.
Well, think of mayonnaise and have a banana.
Now, if I were you, I should, on the contrary, and I should think of a composer with a siphon, as a friend of mine once said. And the composer's name has a siphon in it.
With a siphon?
Yes.
Saint-Saëns.
Saint-Saëns, yes, that's right. Yeah.
And Delilah.
I can't help anymore. No. I can't give the mark hit. The Saint-Saëns. Introduction and Rondo Capriccioso. Strictly speaking, it was the introduction that began and the end of the Rondo Capriccioso which ended that piece. So
I would hate anybody to think that I was criticising the fact that Mr. Perlman played it in such a way that I didn't recognise it.
No, I just didn't know. He played it in such a way that John thought it was another piece entirely.
I'm sorry, Ian. Yes. I thought it was the Havanaise, which is the companion piece.
Mm, mm. True enough.
Well, I was very, very grateful for your help.
Suitably grateful, I think, is the word in this case, don't you? Dennis, here's Itzhak Perlman again, playing something lighter, in fact, playing the part of the entertainer. Dennis, I already know it's The Entertainer by Scott Joplin from the film The Sting, and wouldn't insult you by asking.
You can. I don't insult you.
Feel free. Yeah. What I want to ask you is this. Violin students, like Perlman when he began, have to tune their instruments to notes, and they have to learn what they are. And the notes they tune them to, if you'd like to write this down, are G, D, A, E. After John's question, giving you time, I'm going to ask you for a mnemonic. In other words, a four-word line for remembering those letters. G, D, A, E. And over while you're thinking to John. John, the tuning notes of the fiddle feature at the start of this excerpt. Listen, and then please tell me what the piece is called. Playing and a marvellous piece. Do you know what it is?
I don't know the piece.
Keep him going a bit, John. well done. Pretend you don't know, John.
Yes, all right.
I would say
it has a sort of certain feeling of schmaltziness.
Yes, gypsiness.
So that it might be very early Bartok, or it might be something by Korngold, but I actually don't know the piece.
Oh, really? I think you'll know it. That's out of the middle, I must admit. It's a very gypsy-ish sort of piece.
Yes, but it's not Sarasate or any of those.
No, it's Ravel.
Oh, it's the Tzigane.
Tzigane by Ravel, yes. For half a mark, can you put a date to it?
Tzigane. Not half a mark. I mean, as your as your agent, can I negotiate?
Stay out of this mirror.
Have a shot for half a mark. You might be lucky.
It was written for Yeli Darani.
Yes.
And I should think it was written around about 1929,
30? No, not near enough. 1924. Never mind, you can probably afford a mark. Dennis, now may we have, please, that line for remembering the violin notes, G-D-A-E.
I'm supposed to thank Ian during the course of that for helping me with dirty suggestions. I did actually play the violin for 6 months when I was 11 with Mr. Crisp, who withdrew his services when I was discovered using the violin for French cricket. I would suggest G-D-A-E is simply, they remember Hamlet, and a kind of very short synopsis of its plot would be Gloomy Dane Aggravates Elsinore.
It would, wouldn't it? Yes. I had days and days to think about this, and all I could come up with was Gerald Durrell's Animals Etim. That's
what
happens.
What was the last word?
Etim.
Etim, oh yes.
That's when you have too long to think. You see,
I would have thought good dirt always helps.
Well, you would, actually.
Yes, I would.
George. What about Give Dad an E?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Yes. Yes, in other words. Give Dad an E. Yes, nice thought.
That's shrewd.
Half shrewd a mark. Is right, yes. Frank.
Give the lad half a mark.
All right then, yes, half a mark. That confuses our scorer, doesn't it? Frank, here's Itzhak Perlman playing our old friend the Habanera from Carmen. I'm going to ask you to tell us how that name originated, Habanera, Habanera. Let's listen while you're thinking. Habanera, habanera.
Habanera, I presume, refers to the tobacco leaf, which comes from Havana.
It is from Havana. It came from Cuba. Mm. I thought you might have a long story about how Van Gogh lost his ear, and his doctor said to him, Habanera. But again, you didn't.
I was quite right not to, wasn't I?
You were. Good thinking, Frank. Good thinking, Frank. And you get a perfectly straight mark. Fair enough. This next round concerns doctors. Ian, where can I find Dr. Miracle?
Well, Steve, I don't know.
In his surgery?
If you're sort of in search of somebody like that, I have really a very good doctor indeed, but I think he'd be in trouble if I mentioned his name on the radio.
Yes, he would.
You mean in a musical sense, of course.
How clever of you to realise that.
Well, I think you'd probably find him in The Tales of Hoffmann.
Yes, that's right, you would.
By Offenbach.
Yes, in the Antonia episode of Offenbach, Tales of Hoffmann. Also in an operetta, do you happen to know, by...
By Bizet.
Bizet, yes, but one mark for the two others. That's life. Dennis, which doctor is this?
Yeah! If I could talk to the animals, think what fun we'd have asking over crocodiles for tea. Or maybe lunch with two or three lions, walruses and sea lions. What a lovely place the world would be.
Sounded like Dr. Davis, was it?
Yes, Dr. Davis, actually. Dr. Sammy Davis.
Well,
the younger
one. He was, it, The song comes from Dr. Doolittle.
Dr. Doolittle, yeah. That's your mark, yes. John Amos, there have been various musical versions of the Faust legend, but one of them, called Dr. Faust, was directly adapted by the composer from Marlowe's Dr. Faustus. 1925 saw the first production in Dresden. Fischer-Dieskau revived it in Berlin in 1955. Slightly obscure, perhaps, but who was the composer?
Busoni.
That's right. Busoni is right. And the score completed by Janach. Yes.
The opera was also adapted as a Hollywood musical for Danny Kaye. Don't you remember? Faust, you put your tunies.
Still around concerning doctors. Frank, this is Dr. Gradus ad Parnassum. The composer dedicated that to his daughter, Frank, adding the words, "To my dear little Shushu, with her father's most sincere apologies for what follows." Who was he?
A cabbage, I suppose.
Logically, yes.
Do you remember that Victor Borge sometimes talks about how the whole Debussy family was wiped out? Remember?
Yes.
No. Debussy.
Debussy.
Right.
Yes.
Debussy.
All right, then your mark, yes. The piece is in his children's corner suite. They were given English names, you'll know this, John, because his daughter had an English nurse, which is why this Frenchman gave English titles to the pieces in his children's corner suite. This is where the members of the teams emulate the Silver Swan and exit singing. All the songs today are songs about songs. Dennis, you first. Which song is sung over and over and over and over again?
You mean in that sense,
yes,
it comes
right.
To
there? Yes.
There goes that song again. We used to call it our serenade. We fell in love when we heard it played over and over and over and over again.
Sammy Kahn's song, that's right. Mark to you. John, your song about a song is the Song of Songs. Favourite at many a smoking concert with an earlier generation. Song of Songs. Key C, can you remember it?
That's you don't want the Stravinsky version, do you?
No.
It's far Canticum, from... Canticorum. No.
It's far from Stravinsky, this one.
Oh, far from Stravinsky.
I'll give you an introduction of something.
Song of songs, a song of memory, and a broken melody of love and life.
And then I get rather hazy until it comes to something like, a dream of delight that faded at dawn. Oh, song of songs, oh, night of bliss, when you were my heart,
I like that head note, we call it, that G, don't we? I can't make it.
I can't do it when Frank isn't smoking his pipe beside me.
Frank, your song has a curious authorship. I've seen various writers mentioned, from a Harvard youth to Rudyard Kipling and Rudy Valley. The Kipling contribution seems to have been a poem called Gentleman Songsters. Can you oblige us, please?
We are three little lambs who have lost our way. Ba, ba, ba. We are three little lambs who have gone astray. Ba, ba, ba. Gentlemen songsters out on the spree. From here to eternity, Lord have mercy on such as we. Ah, ah, ah.
Oh, we always said we had a sheep-like audience, didn't we? Bar, bar. Very good on the bars. Yes, there you are. The Whiff and Poof song. And Mark, to you and to Ian for a final song. The Song of the Dawn. Can you manage that in E minor, I think?
I can manage it at all. I can manage it in E minor.
Dawn is breaking and a new day is born. The world is singing the song of the dawn. Birds are awaking, hear them welcome the morn. They're sweetly singing the song of the dawn. Yesterday skies were grey, look, today they are blue. The smiling sun tells everyone, come and start life anew. Sing hallelujah, for the dark night is gone. The world is singing the song of the dawn.
Well, that came from the film The King of Jazz, but the joint kings of this program, thanks to an extra half mark that was screwed out of me by one of the members, winning by half a mark, John Amis and Frank Muir.
Taking part in fine music were John Amis, Frank Muir, Ian Wallace and Dennis Norton. The chairman was Steve Race. The questions were compiled by Steve Race and the program was produced by Tony Schreiber.